When we say the Nephilim, does that mean the giants of our past? In fact, in the Hebrew Bible, Nephilim means a group of mysterious beings or people of unusual large size and strength who lived before and after the flood. Who are they? And are they responsible for many of the mound builders from around the world? Well, today we're going to talk with best-selling author L.A. Marzulli about his 8 books, including the Nephilim trilogy. And he's going to talk about the Nephilim and the giants in the Bible. He has been on the trail of the Nephilim for many years, and he even created a film series that continues his research with interviews from people in their specific field of knowledge. So get your questions ready. I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Please welcome to the Truth Be Told studios, the one and only L.A. Marzulli. There we go. Now let's do the applause. All right. Well, thank you so much, and I'm so excited to have you here. You know, the talk about the Nephilim and the giants that, you know, roamed the earth have been in question, you know, for thousands of years, and that's why we have to have the expert on today. And
thank you. Appreciate that.
Of course. Well, first of all, let's just jump right into it. Is it Nephilim or Nephilim?
Well, I mean, you can pronounce it either way you want. I lean towards Nephilim, although when I first read it, I just pronounced it Nephilim. But my mentor, Lord Dr. I.D.E. Thomas, said, you know, the correct pronunciation is Nephilim. So that's, but I don't make a big deal of it.
Okay, well, yeah, don't be talking down to me. I'm used to my parents doing that. I'm just kidding. Well, tell us what is the Nephilim or Nephilim?
Well, the Nephilim are the progeny of an off-world entity. Let's just start there. Let's just whet your audience's appetite. Let's not spill the beans in the first 30
right,
seconds.
Yeah, right? Let's not get all the juice.
They're off-world entities. So anything that originates off-world is by definition an alien. But as we'll see as the show unfolds, I'm not talking the grays or the tall whites here. Something else.
Okay.
So it's a progeny of these off-world entities, the women of Earth, coming together, mixing the DNA and creating a hybrid entity. And they were called the Nephilim, the giants of renown. And they were really, some of them were really big. Some of the offspring, like I did a report today on Og, king of Bashan.
Right.
Up in the Golan. He was over 13 feet.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's like really, really big. I mean, 13, I'm looking in my room here, in my studio, and the ceiling is 12 feet, all right, to the ceiling, to the ridge beam.
Right.
Bottom of the ridge beam is 12 feet.
Wow.
That's like, you know, oh boy. I mean, you see anything like that, be terrifying. Be absolutely, and so it was. It was terrifying.
Well, I mean, if people always say, oh, that, you know, that can be true, but I mean, we've had, you know, I can't remember his name, but the 8'11 guy, and you know, we have people that are, you know, little people that are 3 feet tall. So it's like, I don't know why it's so hard to believe that somebody that of 13 feet or maybe even bigger could have roamed the earth. So, I mean, it's very possible that that's happened. When was the, I know, you know, we've heard about it in the Bible, and I'm going to get into the mound builders here in a second, but when did we actually find like evidence, was the first evidence that we've heard about? Because we've, you know, when you hear the stories, like my dad used to say, when I was a kid, I caught a 2-pound bass. Well, then 10 years later, it was 15-pound bass. So, you know, the tails get bigger. But when did we actually find the first evidence that you know of?
Well, you can go back into the historical record from researchers or people that put quilled pen to papyrus or whatever.
Right.
The bas relief you have right behind you, I have exactly the same one in my studio.
Yep.
Why are they making that? Because they were real. They were there. Josephus says that the giants, the Nephilim, had countenances so strange and so different from normal human beings that they were terrifying to behold. And the sound was terrible. I mean, when they would roar or yell or do whatever, it would probably make you just sit there and melt in your sandals.
Probably.
You know? Unbelievable.
At least
so we've got
myself.
All sorts of accounts from antiquity. And then we've got what I call the fingerprints of the supernatural. all around us, all around the globe, there seems to be evidence of the supernatural, evidence of the giants, of the Nephilim. It's pretty much global at this point. So you've got Josephus, you've got the ancient writings in the Bible,
right,
which are corresponding. And Josephus writes about 2,000 years ago. But, you know, when you get into, when you get into, let's say, the biblical text, and you hear about Og, king of Bashan, now you're going back to the conquest. So that's another 12, 13, 1400 years prior to Josephus. So it goes back in the historical record, minimum, you know, 3,500 years ago. But then we've got the vestiges of what I would call the Nephilim, and that's global, and that, that can be far older than that.
Now, do you think that this could be part of the Anunnaki, or because, you know, these are pretty powerful beings, or whatever you want to call them. Do you think these might have been like leftovers of the Anunnaki on this planet?
Well, let's define what the Anunnaki are. Supposedly, they come from some other star system. But how do we know that?
Right.
They were able to manipulate space, time, matter, and energy. They had all sorts of knowledge that they bequeathed on human beings. If you get rid of the term Anunnaki and you substitute fallen angel, they're like this. They're parallel. Just go right down the deal. Right down the deal all the way.
Right.
So those who don't, who reject the biblical narrative, don't want anything to do with it because they think it's religious.
Right.
It's actually a guidebook of a supernatural.
Right.
It actually tells the reader what's going on. Hello. That it'll be the seed of the dragon that will be at enmity at war with the seed of the woman. That's Genesis 3:15.
Right.
That sets up the rest of the deal until even into modernity, because the Antichrist will be literally the seed of the dragon. So, I mean, it is the guidebook of a supernatural. There's no doubt about that. That's what it is. So, you know, New Agers, people of that kin, or I should say, look at it, and they can embrace the Anunnaki because it's not religious. But for someone like myself, who's been on both sides of the aisle, I was a New Age guy for like 15 years.
Right.
I was, you know, in the ashram, my third eye was open. I had spirit guides. I did vision quests. I mean, I was there, okay?
Right.
And then at 30, which is 42 years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
I had a Paul on the road to Damascus.
You're 72 years old?
Yeah.
You look amazing for 72.
Thank you. It's water.
Right.
I'll be 72 in December.
Well, what? Yeah, December what?
Crazy. Thank you.
December what?
What was that?
What day in December?
14th.
Oh, I'm the 7th, December 7th.
Oh,
Sagittarius
birthday.
Rule. Yeah, right. Well, you know, because I always say that it's like when we watch horror movies, you know, that's where a lot of times we don't start having nightmares, and sometimes until we have a traumatic experience. You know, car wreck, we start dreaming about having wrecks in cars. And watching a horror movie, we start dreaming about vampires. And I always say it's like even the Greek gods. A lot of times, you know, we hear these stories and myths, but it's a lot of times I've had a vision. Well, sometimes visions come from true experiences. And so that's why when I hear about these stories in the Bible and the Greek gods and, you know, Roman god, all this stuff, I feel like a lot of these people actually experienced it and just passed down the tale to their generations below them. So... Which do you think a lot of that kind of just kept going generation to generation about the Nephilims, Nephilim?
I think the Greek gods were in fact the fallen angels.
Oh, really?
And Hercules is a Nephilim.
Right.
There's no doubt about it. He's the offspring of, you know, Zeus and a female. So he is by definition a Nephilim. That's what he is. And he's got all that strength and all this stuff. Hercules, of ancient glory.
Right.
Hercules, that goofy cartoon.
Right.
But, you know, with the strength of 10 ordinary men.
Keep
I'm
going.
Dating myself here. But the bottom line is I believe that they were real, that they were here. They set up shop. They want to be worshipped. We see the same thing happening over and over and over and over again on a global level. They set up shop. Who is the character that designs Teotihuacan in Mexico? Why are they building a temple to you know, this character, whoever he may be. Is it Quetzalcoatl? I don't know. But they have a little temple for him, and they call them the Teotihuacanos. They have no idea who these people were or where they went. And we hear this over and over and over again. Yeah, the Corral, 5,000 years old, oldest city in the Americas, it just pops up out of nowhere. We have no idea really who built it. I guess they just assimilated into the general population.
Right.
And we hear this, I mean, this is what they say, you know, ad nauseum.
Right.
Wait a minute, guys. Wait a minute. What if something else is going on and you don't, why can't you just be intellectually honest and quit making up nonsensical theories and tell us that you just don't flip and know? A perfect example is the Hopewell Indians built all these mounds behind us.
Right.
The Hopewell, that's who they were, by golly, by gee, by gum. Hopewell's a freaking farmer. That's all he is. He's a farmer. He's uncovering some artifacts that they name his entire culture. They have no idea what they call themselves. Yet, they're going to tell us all about the Hopewell based on archaeological evidence. But when they find, you know, 28 or 30-inch spear points or axes that weigh 28 pounds, oh, those are ceremonial. How do you know they're ceremonial? I mean, you know, they just, everything that they don't understand, that's ceremonial.
Yeah, right.
They, you know, so the chief would hold the big axe and doggone it, you know, he was the mighty chief. So he got a 28-pound axe. Yeah, I get that. But what about a 9-footer bearing that 28-pound axe? Changes the whole paradigm. What about the 10-foot skeletons? We interviewed a guy a week ago this coming Monday when I was in Oklahoma. And I was in Oklahoma. And this gentleman is Cherokee, part Cherokee, part of a tribe, and he's on a quest because his grandfather did a dig in 1928 to 1930. They were hired by the government to go in rescue archaeology because they were going to flood this entire area with a man-made dam.
Right.
There were mounds there. They excavated like 600 skeletons. There were a lot of big boys there. There was one that was 10 feet. There was a woman that he knew. She passed away 3 or 4 years ago when she was a little girl. Okay, a little girl. Her father took her to see the 10-foot skeleton. It was displayed for the townspeople to see. This is before the big kibosh came down. So I'm on the trail of that. Like we interviewed this guy for probably 45 minutes. Fascinating interview. He's got several sites he's interested in. We're interested in. So we're on the trail. We believe in that some of these places are highly highly cursed, highly active.
Right.
Some of them can be portals. It's nothing to fool around with. Even when you go to visit the site, it's nothing to be cavalier about. All sorts of crazy stuff has happened on these mounds. We actually document that in our third film, Secrets of the Supernatural, Voices from the Other Side. There's this Lutheran pastor. So as a Lutheran pastor, you know, the supernatural, well, that's 2,000 years ago. That really doesn't happen now. We just, you know, the Father, Son, Holy Spirit,
right,
everything's going
right.
to be okay. Just shut up, read your hymnal, tithe, be a good citizen, whatever. This guy's in a Lutheran church. He's the head pastor. I'll never forget it. So he let us do a Nephilim Mounds conference there. It was actually our first one. He's taking copious notes as I lecture, Russ Dizdar lectures, Chief Joseph Riverwind lectures. He's like scribbling as fast as he can. He came on the record with me. He told me that one day, one of his parishioners called him up. And this is why he came to us, because he had nothing in his wheelhouse.
Right, right.
Nothing in his grid system to deal with it. He walks in the front door, and the coffee table is levitating in the living room.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was that before or after the alcohol?
No alcohol.
Right, okay.
He said that he went to a house where they would open up this door in the cellar.
Right.
And sometimes it would just be a crawl space behind it. Okay. Other times, it would be a black hole that just descended, a bottomless pit. They threw things down into the pit, never heard it end.
Wow. So, I mean, that does kind of, because we've heard a lot about, you know, like you said, the fallen angel and a lot of people talk about even, I don't want to get completely off track, but even like, you know, the devil or, what's the angel, the fallen angel?
Lucifer?
Lucifer, there we go. But he was not actually as evil as people say he was. And so, you know, I think that's where a lot of people get confused. And I was going to ask you, do you think religion has created a lot of these myths of being scared of the devil or Lucifer or a fallen angel to get us off the trail of trying to find the truth about the Nephilims and the giants? Because it seems like who cares if there was large people? You know, there were dinosaurs on the earth that were much larger than the Nephilim that I know of. You may know different. But why should we be so scared of knowing the truth about the Nephilim?
Because the Nephilim are the progeny of the dragon. And this goes back to Genesis 3:15.
Okay.
There's a little vignette in our Bibles. And I challenge your listeners to pop open, take that Bible, you know, out of the attic or off the bookshelf that's been there for 30 years and no one's ever opened it.
Right.
Open it up. Look at Genesis 3:15 and blow your mind. So what that says, there's a vignette. There's a pre-incarnate Christ who's there in the garden with Adam and Eve. So right off the bat, people go, oh, you believe in Adam and Eve? That's ridiculous. Well, okay. So let's just go with the story, okay? You got Adam and Eve over here. There it is. And you've got the dragon over here. And the third party, the theophany, the presence of a pre-incarnate Christ, how does that work, right?
Right.
Says to the dragon, I will put enmity, war, between you and the woman, between your offspring and her offspring. He, one coming from the seed of the woman, will crush the dragon's head. The dragon will bruise his heel. I do a half-hour broadcast show. I do two shows a day, Tuesday through Friday.
Right.
And On the Trail of a Nephilim UFO Update, and then the other one on Rumble, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural Report, which I can't do on YouTube, or I'll be immediately deplatformed.
Oh, my God.
I'm spreading disinformation about that nasty COVID virus. So you can't be doing that. Just stop it right now. Delete.
Right.
So much for free speech, right?
Right.
So be that as it may, I do a half-hour show on the PTO network, and we're trying to expand our reach because people need to hear this. My very first show is Genesis 3:15. And it's free, folks. You can download the app on your phone, PTO. Go to On the Trail of a Nephilim. Watch the show. It's free. What do you want? Everybody's only, you know, all the other stuff should be free. Well, there it is.
There you go.
It takes me a full 8-9 hours to actually do a show from start to finish.
Wow.
Just a half an hour.
Yeah.
You know what it takes.
Oh, I know. Yeah. It doesn't take just an hour you're on air. So I know.
No. It's a lot of work. And I'm glad to do it. So the first show is the primer on Genesis 3:15. If you think you know your Bible, or you've never cracked open the pages, just start there, because that gives us exactly what's going to happen for the rest of the pages. Hmm. Because the rest of the book is about the one who's coming that will crush the dragon's head. Why? Because the dragon is one mean, evil dude that comes to rob, kill, and destroy. Hmm. And we can see his handiwork all over the globe right now. Turn on the 6 o'clock news. That's who's behind it.
So, I mean, so when did, because, you know, there's so many different sites around the world that it's even like the Great Pyramid and many of the archaeological sites around the world that are even under some of the ancient sites. Do you feel those had the influence of the Nephilim? And then we'll get into the mound builders around the world. Do you think a lot of these sites that we can't figure out who these people were and how things were built, do you feel like the Nephilim were responsible for many of these?
No doubt in my mind. No doubt. In fact, here's some of the proof. In our fifth film, it's called The Axis Mundi, On the Trail of a Nephilim, the fifth film, Axis Mundi, the center of the world. We are at a place called America Stonehenge in New Hampshire. And there is the site has a center to the site.
Right.
And then all around that center are standing stones. So when the Stone family bought the site, all 110 acres or whatever it is, it's around 110 acres.
Right.
They knew something was up, but they didn't know what. So they, you know, well, maybe it's astronomical. So they wanted to see where the sun came up on the summer solstice sunrise. So they went to the center of their henge and looked out at a stone where the sun was coming up. Sure enough, it's right over the stone, right over the stone. So they went, wow. And then they realized there were other stones with the equinoxes, the solstices, the lunar up, you know, sunrise, or the lunar, not standstill, but the lunar progression,
right,
all around the site. Okay, that's as far as they got. Enter the grandson, Kelsey Stone. In my opinion, this is the greatest archaeological discovery of the 21st century, hands down, without question. And of course, archaeologists won't even look at it, right? Right. Well, that's just coincidence. A ceremonial artifact, LA. You know, you guys need to wake up and look at some of this stuff, because this kid was not an archaeologist and had no interest in archaeology, but he knew his site and he knew something was up. So he went to the center of his site on Google Earth, and he drew a straight line on Google Earth out to the summer solstice standing stone. Now you have 2 points. Okay, those 2 points, you know, who knows where that's going to go? Because he wanted to see if the line from the center of the henge out to his summer solstice standing stone, right?
Right.
That line, if it lined up anywhere, if it came close to his house. So he draws the line. Wow, it's pretty close to the house. That's far out. Just a college kid, right?
Right.
He had no dog in the hunt. No dog in the hunt. He's just goofing around. So he extends the line on Google Earth, and he finds himself going past Nova Scotia and then Newfoundland, and he's out over the Atlantic, and he goes through Ireland, and now he's in southern England. The light bulb goes off, and he goes, gee, I wonder if I'm close to Stonehenge, England.
I was just thinking about that.
I wonder if I'm close to Stonehenge, England. And so he goes, let me see if I can find it here. Of course, it's always good to go to the index. This is from my book, Gomachel of the Nephilim, right there. And we will find America Stonehenge 101. See? Instead of thumbing through the pages mindlessly, LA, just turn to the book, to the index of the book, and there, for all to see, then you can show them what you're talking about. Oh my gosh, is this the one where I took all the pages out? It is. I'm sorry. Okay, so I'm not going to dig for them. The bottom line is this. He finds himself in southern England, and he begins to scroll, you know, and enlarge the deal. The line goes through. There are two trilithons like this. They're set at 90-degree angles from each other.
Right.
That line bisects the top of the center trilithon of both of those structures at Stonehenge, England. That, my friend Tony, is not a coincidence.
No, God,
no. It's not a coincidence. And I've shown that to surveyors, and they just sit there and go, wow. Because in order to do that, you've got to triangulate. You know, you can't get a string in a boat and, okay, pull the string a little harder. I want to see where it is. So, right. You know, and the thing is that they're saying that America Stonehenge is 4,000 years old. Stonehenge, England, allegedly, is not that old. See where this goes? Once they got that, and we were up in the upper, what I call the war room at America Stonehenge with Dennis Stone. And he had a piece of paper. Man, I wish I could show you that. He had a piece of paper that they drew, that a surveyor, an architect, drew it all up. So it's absolutely precise. First of all, the site is built on the constellation Draco. No coincidence there at all.
No
right?
coincidence.
I mean, it could be the Winnie the Pooh constellation,
right,
but it's
right.
Draco, the dragon. Gee, what a coincidence, right? So he knew about Stonehenge and the connectivity. Was it a coincidence, just this bizarre coincidence, or is there connectivity to other sites? So they started going in the other standing stones. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Hit it.
Chaco Canyon, Teotihuacan, Mexico, Machu Picchu, Peru, pyramids in the Canary Islands, and the Great Pyramid of Giza.
I think I have. That's the false flag, but I don't. I was just saying if there's a line, if I can cut that off. I don't know if that's it or not.
Yeah, and it goes. Where did you get that from?
Off the internet.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I got this one here too.
Yeah, I mean it's absolutely profound. So that's not a coincidence. And so we are looking at, when we look at that, we are looking at the fingerprints of the supernatural. There's only two choices. You've got an alien from flying in a craft doing it, or right. You've got fallen angels. And see, most people can't get there because they've been so beat over the head with religion. And that's not what we're talking about.
Right.
We're talking about what I believe is the absolute truth. And so the once we plug in the biblical narrative, that's the key. Once you plug in the biblical narrative, it unlocks the whole deal. And then we get our heads around it. You go, oh my gosh, I get it. Fallen angel technology, Nephilim architecture. Fallen angel technology, Nephilim architecture. And we see it over and over on a global basis.
So how long ago do you feel that the Nephilim came to this planet? And when did they become, in your opinion or your research, less visible for the human eye?
The Book of Enoch tells us exactly how they came. They came when in the days of Jared, which is pre-flood.
Right.
So you're talking thousands of years ago. It's a group of fallen angels. This is the basis of my book, Countermove, which it took 2 years to write. Lots of research in, and hats off to my friend and editor, Sonda Allison. Mondo Gonzalez wrote a chapter there.
Nice.
Mark Kahn did the forward and was very helpful throughout the construction of the book. Took 2 years to write. Lots of warfare around that book. But we know in the days of Jared, the 200 watcher angels descended on Mount Hermon, and they created a pact that I fear that you will indeed not agree to do this thing, and I alone will bear the penalty of a great sin. So the angels know exactly what they're doing. They do it anyway. They take wives. They go into them in the biblical sense.
Right.
Now they've got all this progeny, which are the Nephilim. And according to the Book of Enoch, the Nephilim began to eat and drink the flesh and blood of human beings.
Mm.
That's when the judgment comes down. See, it's like people, they go, well, why is the God of Old Testament so angry all the time? He destroys the earth in the flood. Then he wipes out Sodom and Gomorrah. He confuses the language. You know, I don't understand this guy. And then when the Israelites go into the promised land, he tells them to kill everybody. Nope, that's not for me. Can't go there. Don't want to go there. Not
right.
afraid to say it.
Right.
But, you know, no new Nephilim. But he doesn't do it. You know, and people just, look, when I got there 42 years ago, I became born again and spirit-filled. So I'm reading the Bible.
Right.
Bah, 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 and I get to the flood, and I go, wait a minute. We're going to destroy everybody on the planet. For why? Because you don't know. Because I didn't know Genesis 3:15. I didn't understand what the Nephilim were. And then you turn a few pages over and you get to the Tower of Babel. Did you just freeze? I hope not.
Nope.
Are you
I'm
there?
Here. Okay. I'm just listening. So.
All right. So we get, you're like this.
I'm a good mime.
Tony, wake up. No, so he's awake, folks. He's being very attentive. So, but he was, it looked like he was frozen, and that's what happened.
I'm just listening.
Anyway,
I'm a good listener.
You're a great listener. So you get to the Tower of Babel, and you go, wait a minute. What's the, they're just building a tower. And you confuse their language again. Once again, you're meddling in human beings. Ah, you puny human. Ah, that's what it seems like, right? And then we get to Sodom and Gomorrah. And it's like you want to tear your hair out. Wait a minute. Wait. Time. Why is this guy, whoever this guy is in the Old Testament, right? Why is he so vengeful? Kill everybody. Ah!
Right.
And then you get to the promised land and the conquest. And Richard Dawkins goes off on this. You know, Joshua in the battle of Jericho and right. the walls came tumbling down. He sings a song and then he goes, yeah. And then Joshua and the crew, they go in and they kill everybody. And he goes, how can anybody possibly serve this vengeful, homicidal, maniacal, crazed God of the Old Testament? Because Jesus seems to be exactly the opposite.
Right.
But then Jesus tells us this. If you've seen me, you see the Father. I and the Father are one. Wait a minute. So I'm going for like 10 years reading this stuff and just going, I don't understand it. I'm putting it on the back shelf. This is way beyond my pay grade. I get a book called The Omega Conspiracy. Changed my life. Met my mentor, Dr. I.D.E. Thomas, the author of that book. I'm on a trail because of that book. It revolutionized my life, changed my life. We've created 13 books, 21 films,
wow.
all in some way to do with the Nephilim, and we ain't
amazing.
Done yet. we're not done yet. We're on the trail. That's why I do the daily show and the weekly show. So that's once we plug in Genesis 15, then when we get to the flood, Genesis 6, we go, oh, I see. This is the dragon seed, which isn't human. They're not supposed to be here. What are they trying to do? The dragon is trying to contaminate the genome of humans. And if he can successfully do that, then the prophecy of the one who will crush his head will not prevail. It's over. Game over. I win. Cosmic chess match. I wrote about all this in the book, The Cosmic Chess Match. The bottom line is this. At the cross, and this is a three-hour conversation.
All right. No.
Yeah, and I don't understand it. I mean, I don't understand the severity of it. I don't understand why he allowed the barbaric nature of it to take place, because he's flailed. To give you just an idea, that's the Shroud of Turin.
Right.
And you can see the helmet of thorns.
Right.
You can see from here, it's always good to have props on, eh? You can see here the scourging. You can see the whip marks on the arms.
Oh, yeah.
Look at the thrashings on the legs.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
I mean, he was basically shredded. There's no way. There's no coming back from that. He's going to die no matter what. They just got to get him when he's hanging there. And it's brutal. The nails, I mean, you're not coming down. It's over. And I don't understand the severity of it for a minute. I really don't. I don't understand it. I've asked for insight. I've read commentaries. And, you know, maybe on this side, we don't get it. All I know is that afterwards, and I wrote about this in my new book, shameless plug, Countermove, How the Nephilim Returned After the Flood. It says in the guidebook of a supernatural, right, that Jesus, the moment he dies, he descends to the lower parts of the earth, a place called Tartarus. And we know that that's the dungeons where these fallen angels have been kept, who sinned, who left their first estate, who basically did the unthinkable, had sex with women. That's the penalty of the great sin. They have the sex with the women. They created the offspring. The judgment came in the flood. They're all wiped out. But these angels were there, these fallen angels were there in this gloomy dungeon, according to the text. Guess what? This is the first place Jesus goes. How do we know that? Jesus had to tell somebody, because we're not following him down there with a camera.
Right.
Okay, can we do that over again?
Right.
Yeah, hold on. Cut! Right? I mean,
right,
they're not
right.
doing it that way. So Jesus is telling them where he went. He goes down and it's a proclamation to the fallen angels. No jailbreak, you're not getting out. I win. Cosmic chess match. It's over. I have now crushed the head of the dragon. It's over. And that's when we see everything change. But this brings it into your wheelhouse. Another prophecy in the book of Daniel says this. In the latter days, knowledge will increase, and men will run to and fro over the face of the earth. Then it says, seal up the words of this book, Daniel, until the time of the end. So no one knew what that meant. What are we talking about? Now knowledge has increased exponentially. Men run to and fro over the face of the earth. But in that Daniel, in those Daniel prophecies, it says this. They will mingle their seed. Once again, seed.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about the seed. They will mingle their seed with the seed of men. But they shall not cleave to them.
Mm.
So it can't be men. No, that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Who are they? Who are they? And the they, once again, this ties right into the breeding program that we see aboard the so-called UFOs.
Right.
The hybrids walking amongst us, according to Dr. Jacobs. So what we see in antiquity is repeating itself in modernity.
So
that's how it changed.
And what's the, because I want to, before, because time is going way fast, I want to ask about the mounds, because I've talked about the serpent mounds in Ohio, and is there one continent that actually had more signs or artifacts of the Nephilim more than others, or is it kind of equal around the world?
No, it's all over the map. Some sites giants are buried. Other sites, like let's go to Sacsayhuaman. Well, we've never heard anything about giants being buried there.
Right.
But when you go to Sacsayhuamán in Peru and you see megalithic stones, polygonal shapes, fitted perfectly with no mortar, ashlar construction, that's what it's called. Once again, fingerprints of a supernatural. Nephilim architecture, fallen angel technology. Because the Inca cannot cut that stone right. with a copper chisel.
Right.
That's absolutely laughable. And yet, all the guides parrot the same stupid thing. The Inca were master stone builders, and they made these walls that you see in front of you in Sacsayhuamán. Well, wait a minute, Mr. Tour Guide. I've got a video clip I'll show you right here. Here is a brass chisel, harder than copper. Here's a piece of andesite stone. We'll strike it four times. Guess what? The chisel completely dulls. So tell me, sir, has anyone actually tried to do this? No, we have not. You know?
Right.
Ceremonial. It's the same nonsense wherever you go. And once you see through it, it's like, oh, I see. You know, you're just parroting what you've been told to say, but you have no idea what you're saying.
Well, Brian Forrester, I'm sure you know Brian.
Absolutely.
And I'm a big fan of his, and I've had him on the show several times talking about the elongated skulls. Do you connect the elongated skulls to the Nephilim? Oh, look at there. Looky there.
They are. And this is the work of Joe Taylor, who was did all the molds. This came out of the Paracas Museum.
Wow, that is amazing.
So let's walk through it.
Yeah, please.
And I consider Brian a good friend. It was Brian's YouTube video in 2012 that alerted me to what the Nephilim, that the possibility that we might be looking at the Nephilim there.
Hmm.
So these guys show up about 3,200, 3,300 years ago, fits the timeline perfectly. There was a diaspora of giants and Nephilim tribes in the Levant, in the Promised Land. When Joshua and Caleb go in, it's like kicking over the hornet's nest.
Hmm.
They flee the area. They totally flee the area, okay?
Right.
Some go west. Some, we think, go down the Red Sea, out into the Pacific, boom, and come over to Peru. So here's some things that we've discovered, and we've discovered a lot since 2013. It's almost 10 years ago. The orbits are 25 to 30% larger than a normal human being. You can cradle a headboard a kid till the cows come home, and you can't increase the size of the orbits, number one. Number two, the pupillary distance is closer. A human being's is about 65 millimeters.
Right.
These pupillary distance are about 45 millimeters. What that means, according to the optometrists on our team, they probably had night vision.
Oh, wow.
There were no incisors in the teeth. The jaw is incredibly massive.
Yeah, that's huge.
Zygomatic arch, which you see right here, it's got a piece of tape on it. Very, very robust. Look what's in front of the eyes. Look right here. Look at this. Very, very pronounced.
Very amazing.
Extremely
yeah.
pronounced.
Wow. Okay? Huge.
Then you've got this. You've got, this is a suture. Look at the massive forehead. This is a suture, okay, which goes around the skull. All of our plates have sutures. There should be a suture that goes from the frontal plate back here, splitting the parietals in the two halves. There's none. Not even a vestige of it. Hmm. Not even a remote sign of it. Not there.
Wow.
But the kicker, the smoking gun, in my opinion, and this is the work of our anthropologist on our team, Rick Woodward. So we sent these models of the skulls to Rick several years ago. And then Rick wrote a paper and he said, LA, this is genetic. Why? Because this is a foramen magnum right here, this hole. Not where the white is. The white is the epoxy to
right.
hold the dowel.
Right.
But the hole right there, look at the perimeter right there. Okay? That is the foramen magnum.
Damn.
That is all the way to the rear, to the occipital of the skull. If it's any further back, it's outside the skull.
Right.
It should be right here.
Yeah. Wow.
You cannot cradle headboard a child and move the foramen magnum. We are looking at genetic anomalies. And yet we did the DNA. We've got, this is episode 7 in On the Trail of a Nephilim, streaming.lamarzulli.net, streaming.lamarzulli.net. Download it, instant gratification. I think it's like under $4 now.
Wow.
What a deal, right? What are you waiting for?
Right, and, get and, it. And
we've got medical doctors on the team, surgeons, and more than one doctor.
And what are the doctors saying? What are the doctors saying?
They're all saying the same thing. After studying the skull, they go, it's genetic. Whatever this is genetic. This is not the result of cranial deformation. It's not. And, you know, because there's too many genetic anomalies that make absolutely no sense. It's all in our film. We did the DNA evidence, and the DNA showed the mitochondrial coming from the female side of the equation, coming from the Middle East, the Levant, and the Black Sea area. That, my friend, is Nephilim Central all day long. Guess what? Brian had these two guys that came down, and they kind of pushed, for the best of my knowledge, they kind of pushed Brian out of the results. They really didn't share the results. They made a film about it, which really sucks. But they took 100 samples. They were able to get nuclear DNA, which we were not able to get. And basically, it came up this, unknown. In our gen banks, totally other, we have no idea what we're looking at. We don't know what this is. We don't know what this is. So that fits my paradigm.
Yeah.
Because if it is fallen angel DNA, then you wouldn't have it in your gen bank. And it's not in your gen bank. So look, I mean, you know, I could spend the rest of my life in Paracas if I had permits and a lab and all this other stuff. But the Peruvian people really don't care. I mean, they don't. I hate to say it, but they don't. It's just all about goofy paperwork and shuffling paper from one thing to another. So we actually do the work. It costs a couple $100,000 to actually get to that point.
Wow.
And we showed our results. And you know what the archaeologist said? It's all contaminated. No, it's not, sir. You know what our protocols were. Our protocols were stringent. We had lab suits on, head to toe, double sleeves, masks, goggles, boots on our feet, double gloves. And then when they bring in the skull, we would take the DNA with a grinder, right? With a grinder. It's falling into an envelope. Envelope goes like this, right into a vial or a bag, flagged and tagged by Chase Klotsky, done. We go out of the room. We get rid of our one lab suit completely, blow each other off with compressed air, don a fresh new lab suit, exactly the same thing, new hood, new gloves, new everything,
right.
Walk in. Are you kidding me? We had 40 changes. We had 40 lab suits that we took in a suitcase, disposable lab suits, 40 of them, to make sure that when we did this, that we were, you know, we had enough, that there was no contamination. One of the samples had my DNA in it and tossed it out. The other ones didn't. So it's a straw man argument. You know, you can say anything you want.
Right.
You know,
right.
Oh, well, it was contaminated. Well, that's easy for you to say. Show me how. Show me where we screwed up. It's all on film. Richard Shaw, my good friend who passed away 3 years ago.
Right.
Rick, you know, filmed it. And our procedure was textbook. In fact, people who saw what we did, they applauded us for being in the field and having that type of stringent control mechanism. So, you know, we broke the story. Brian's two guys, it's on Gaia. They really didn't do anything with it. I've been trying to get a hold of them. They won't answer my emails. So, you know, it is what it is.
Well, first of all, thank you, Brian, because Brian was in the chat room saying hi to you and myself. So thanks for tuning in, Brian. But a lot of the artifacts,
hi,
right? A lot of the artifacts that have been discovered, you know, I know there was a discovery in the Grand Canyon and many parts of the country and even all around the world. A lot of governments come in and take the evidence and whatever they do with it. But what is the percentage of most of the artifacts found around the world being, you know, confiscated by the governments?
It's always that way. It's the same story. Let me tell you, true story. This guy came on the record. He's an oil guy, oil rigger guy,
right.
He's in the oil industry, okay? So they're in West Virginia, and there's like, if you've ever been in West Virginia, they call them haulers.
Right.
So there's like this, you can get lost in there. There's just these like canyons that go nowhere. And it's crazy, right?
Right.
So they all meet up at the foot of this one holler. And, you know, there's like mountains on either side, you know, maybe 100 feet up. It's like this valley, but it's kind of narrow. So they go, well, how are we going to get the rig in here and park our cars? So there's a bulldozer there. Well, let's take the bulldozer and we'll create more of a flat berm. So the guy goes in with the dozer. Nobody's got a Nephilim dog in the hunt.
Right,
they're not even thinking
right.
about any of this stuff, right? And there's like a berm that they're looking at. They don't know what it is. Dozer goes in. All of a sudden, this huge skull comes rolling out. Everything stops. Everybody runs over. They all start taking pictures of this thing. They measure it. The thing's huge. It's like three times the size of a normal skull.
Oh, wow.
And it's a human skull. There's no doubt about it. Okay. All work stops. The guys go home. Next morning, they come back. Now, he came on the record and said this. About 10 years ago, it happened. He came on the record in my show. I didn't pixelate his face. I didn't disguise his voice. So this is the real deal. He said, you know, people need, and we keep hearing stories of it, it's everywhere, right?
Right.
So he comes on the record and he says they arrived at the site. There were armed guards, black SUVs with antennas. There was a canopy over the site where the skull had come out. They were immediately met by their boss, their cell phones confiscated. Each person deleted the photos on their cell phone. And then they were asked, did you share this with anybody?
Oh, my gosh.
That's how it's done. That, my friend, is how it's done.
Well, first of all, we only have about 4 minutes left. Part two, hopefully you'll come on down the road, because we still we have so much to talk about. But to close it out, what is the latest discovery that you know of, that you've heard of, that may be part of the next Nephilim discovery?
Well, like I said, we had this one gentleman that we talked to. There was a 10-footer in the grave. They exhumed a 10-footer in West Virginia. You know, there's not, I'm sorry, in Oklahoma, not West Virginia. They took out over 600 skeletons. The whole place was flooded.
Okay.
So we are on the trail of that. This guy is the gentleman who we interviewed. His grandfather was there in 1928, and 10 footers coming out of the graves. They're there. We also have another site, excuse me, that we're actively looking at. Not committed to anything yet, but you know, in 2025, the lunar standstill will occur right over the Octagon down in Newark, Ohio. I will be there, camera in hand. Are you kidding me? Because we didn't even touch that, because that's the smoking gun, because people didn't know about the Native Americans had no idea about the 18 and a half year lunar cycle. Yeah,
oh,
the Octagon mound is constructed on an 18 and a half year lunar cycle. Stonehenge, England, 18 and a half year lunar cycle.
Hmm.
And America Stonehenge, 18 and a half year lunar cycle. And it goes on and on and on everywhere. Karnak, France, not all the sites,
right,
but some of the sites where the stones are, 18 and a half year lunar cycle.
That is amazing. And
that's their fingerprint.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll mark the calendar and be out there too with you. thank you so much. And unfortunately,
thanks,
I wish I had another hour to talk to you, but we'll have to
That'd
do a part
good.
Two. But tell again your daily show, where people can find your books and all that good stuff.
We're on YouTube, L.A. Marzulli. I do a daily show from Tuesday to Friday. And there's two shows, On the Trail of the Nephilim, UFO Update. And then over on Rumble, we do politics, prophecy, and the supernatural. And then on Friday, we preempt the PTL show, which is network quality. It's a whole different show. It's network quality, a lot of, you know, cut-ins, cut-outs. It's the real deal. It's a 30-minute show. And you can watch that by downloading the PTL app and never miss an episode. And I think that tonight there's 4 episodes so far that we've done on that. So it's streaming.lamarzulli.net, streaming. LAMarzulli.net, instant gratification. You can download all the films and watch them. And Brian Forrester is featured in several of them. And Brian, if you're listening, thank you so much for your friendship through all these years. And hopefully we'll get back on the trail down south in Peru at some point.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of both you young fellas, and I appreciate you being on the show. And again, I can't believe you're 72. But to another fellow Sagittarian, I can see why you enjoy doing this.
There you go, Tony.
Well, thank you, everybody, for joining in. I really appreciate you. Yeah, live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper.
Right. And as you know, I'm here every Friday. Go to our truthbetoldworldwide.com. Check out all of our upcoming shows. We have some great shows coming up. And as you can see, we have some legends in this field that come on Truth Be Told. But until next time, I'm Tony Sweet for Truth Be Told. And we'll see you soon. I'll see you next week.
This has been another episode of Truth Be Told. Thank you so much for watching. Recorded live at UBN Go Studios in Burbank, California. Join us on social media. Facebook, Truth Be Told Radio. Instagram, Truth Be Told Paranormal. Go to Truth Be Told Worldwide for more information on upcoming shows.